my name is Darwin Dees. I'm Darwin Dees.
You are Darwin Dees.
So that's just what you call me.
That is what I call you.
What's your name?
My name is Dennis the Menace.
Oh, it's you.
Oh, it's me.
We emailed
before. Yes, we did. See, big surprise. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there you go. It's happening now, man.
It's all happening.
It's all happening.
It's all happening.
So you know what's cooler than, like, regurgitating the bio?
What?
Revisionist history.
Ice cold?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what?
Revisionist history is a lot more fun. So I'm going to tell you a few things, one of which I learned from you in your email.
Okay.
You're not from the UK. Amazing, right?
Amazing.
Amazing. In fact, it's kind of like there's New York and there's Asheville, which would be North Carolina, by the way.
Right.
Wesleyan University. I'm going to make an assumption you're not Episcopalian.
That's correct.
I'm just making this assumption. You took a lot of philosophy.
That's correct.
So I've given you all that.
You've given me all that to start.
I've given you all that to start because revisionist history is a lot more fun.
Right. It's like the part in Being John Malkovich where
exactly.
When Craig Schwartz finally gets famous, he gets obviously really overexcited to say this one thing, and it goes something like, there's lies and there's the truth, and art always tells the truth even when it's lying. What do I not want people to know?
Oh, that's good too.
Tour Essential for me is a book of matches so that I can light one after I fart in the van.
Nice. See, there you go.
That's needed.
But this is important.
This is important. And you know, and it's funny, some people have never heard of that, lighting a match after you fart, but we always did
great.
It in my
no,
family.
It's great stuff. It's long, long, long-winded. Never mind. You like to record alone, but then when you bring it on the road, you're a band.
Correct.
So you've been written up as are you a band, an artist, or a chicken
menace.
Dinner?
I'm a menace of my own. Band, artist, yes, everything.
I mean, other people are going to be on stage with you tonight.
Yeah.
But none of them actually played on the record.
That's correct. I prefer to do things myself. I'm very independent, extremely independent. What's a word for more than independent? Well, anyway, I like to do it all myself if I can. And that's kind of how I got started on the DIY tip anyway. It was like, well, I like doing things myself and it's cheaper and I don't have any money. So that's kind of how I got started recording myself and stuff. And I've kept doing it because I like to save money and I like to do things myself.
One of the recent quotes is that, you know, you don't think like your voice, you know, kicks ass, but then you also don't think your guitar playing kicks ass. But doing it yourself is also the exploration of getting, advancing things, because it's kind of a self-induced prophecy, is it not?
Well, you learn things as you go. Is that what you're kind of
getting
at?
Yeah, you kind of force yourself to.
You have to learn.
Because if you ain't got a session musician there to help you out, guess what?
Then you have to do it. You have to learn how. And I did.
You have to figure it out.
That was the story of how I learned how. That was the story of the lead guitar parts on the new record.
Right, four string to six string, right?
Four string to six string. Yeah. See, the four string story is a different story. But the six string story is a story of just falling in love with lead playing, like Thin Lizzy lead playing, and, you know, just really wanting to be able to do it. And then it becoming a part of my new sound. And so it happened.
American bands always say UK audiences are better and they would die to make it in the UK. Even though there's not as much money, theoretically. Hmm. And then UK bands, all they want
is to make it in the USA.
Is to make it in the US. Constellations hit pretty darn well in the UK, but of course
it's chump change in the US.
That's right, it's chump change in the US. So here you are, this US guy, but your initial fame and being bigger is in the UK.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
So what's that like?
Well, it's cool. I mean, it works very well for me. I mean, it's like, you know, I get to go to my job and then go home. And like sometimes in the UK, I'll get harassed even a little bit, you know, like I don't want to be constantly, interacted with on the basis of something that I did a year ago or 3 years ago. I want to be received as the human being that I am now in this moment.
Are you saying they harass you because of what you did back then?
They harass me because of music that I made in 2009.
Because they think it's too poppy, commercial?
No, they harass me because they love it.
I see.
They don't realize that they're harassing me with their positive labels and things.
Oh, oh, I see what you're saying, because in other words, they're stuck there.
They're stuck there, and I'm right here, and I'm being here now, baby. I'm
no,
on the
I
wave.
Get it. I
so
get
anyway,
it.
So that's one functional thing about, oh, my job's in the UK. That's great. I'll just go over, rock out for like hundreds of people. It's awesome. Get money, go home, and rest. You know, and I like that. And I am working to you know raise our profile in the USA. Obviously, that's my number one goal now is to make that happen too. But it takes longer and whatever, and it's ultimately gonna, you know, I'm gonna have to trade in that sort of that respite, that sort of peaceful island thing that I have. That I can still go home from my job.
But hence why I was confused, because there's so much buzz from the UK. Mm. And now Lucky Number is a UK label.
Right.
Right? Now, is there an official label here?
There's not. I mean,
I didn't think so.
There's
so like, they sent me, quote, an import.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm an American import.
You're an American import from America.
From America.
It's pretty cool.
I'm a British import from America.
British import from America.
Yeah, technically.
Right. Which is weird, isn't it?
It is weird.
So that's a great...
upside down.
But that's a very existential thing, that America's your home. Great Britain is your success.
I don't know. I think, it makes me think more of like, to get perfectly pretentious about it, Hegel.
Right.
The other, the philosophy of the other, the philosophy of that in order to be what one is requires the reflection in the eyes of the other. So that was Hegel's idea, and that was maybe before existentialism, but certainly philosophy and nerdy and good to know.
So speaking of being upper crust and talking about things like Hegel,
mm-hmm.
The new record. So when somebody hears You Can't Be My Girl,
yeah.
Do you think that the fact that it's kind of, you know, that there's that contraction in there kind of makes people scratch their heads and go, wait a minute, what's he really trying to say here? Or is it just okay that it's a friggin' love song and you're allowed to reject and it's permissible to do that?
Well, I think it's just, you have very few words, very few words to use in a pop song, you know? You have about, I don't know, maybe 14 chorus, let's say.
Yeah,
for
okay.
The rest,
for the middle eight, you get an extra like 12 words.
Yeah, for the
12
middle eight,
words.
You get an extra 8 to 16 words.
Yeah.
But anyway, you have few words to use, and so it means you have to rely on implying things. So for that song, by saying you can't be my girl, I am implying that there is somewhere desire or interest or reason why that would be a relevant statement. When you put that into the forefront of a song as a chorus, then you have to sort of be able to collect from the contraction that, oh, there's some attraction there. There's some, and there definitely is.
Free to be editorial me, right?
Yes.
So number one, you say that is a, quote, you're quoted, I'm quoting you, a failure lyrically. But then you talked about your friend who was blind. So when you're talking about, you know, a failure lyrically, and then you met somebody, you know, who was blind and had to do this.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that, because
well,
it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, well, my friend Angie, is we've been friends for like 15 years, and we've always had like a pretty... like good understanding of each other as people, and she writes songs and she can read. She can see well enough to read. She can see something that's right in front of her face, but she doesn't like her, you know, her, she can't see more than, you know, she can't see very clearly more than a foot in front of her or anything like that. So she's basically blind, and she loves to write songs, and you know, she has an analytical mind. She's Aquarius, and she has a very facile mind, and she's very creative, and she would sort of take in the wisdom, this perennial wisdom about you want to put imagery into your songs. And then she would sort of go throw her hands up and go, well, what am I supposed to write songs about if I can't really see much? And she actually wrote a song about that conundrum. And I was sort of excited to share the experiment that I did on that song lyrically of appropriating a rejection letter as a form of sort of, I wish I knew what to call that type of artistic appropriation of a familiar form, because I maybe would have called the album that.
So I want to cover the three obvious things, but we'll cover them fast because they're kind of fun. I love this quote, that your look is made of random things you stole from different hipsters.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful, because the target audience could be very upset as they watch you and look and say, and they look at their, you know, they kind of look at their hair or something, or they look at, you know, what they're wearing and they go, so wait a minute. Is he mocking me or is he complimenting me?
No, see, there's a seven year time gap in there, because these are things I stole 7 years ago from other hipsters, back when they were cool.
When hipsters were, now that's a funny lie.
No, the things are cool.
I took the stuff.
Hipsters have always been cool and they're still cool to me. And I don't have a grudge against hipsters the way hipsters have a grudge against hipsters.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is hipsters have a, exactly, that's the point.
But
that's an issue right there. Think about it.
Yeah, it's an issue for them. You're part of the continuum of hipsters, Dennis. Your name is Dennis the Menace. That's like,
yeah, it's a problem in and of itself.
You're an aging hipster.
I'm aging. That, you know, that's going to be.
You interviewed the Talking Heads back in,
aging,
what was it, 1980?
I think aging hipster is a great radio name if all else fails.
But there's a continuum, you see. There's a connection, you see.
Exactly.
And all these other hipsters are hating themselves. They're just trying to deny that connection. They're like.
Yeah.
They're like vagina jailers. They're trying to quote another Duncan Trussell.
Are they not opening for you at South by Southwest?
Here's the thing, Dennis. You and I, we're positive people, and we're on the inside of this paradigm. We're going to have to flip it back right side up so that hipsters love themselves again. Because we obviously, we're happy and we like ourselves.
We're going to do it.
And we're hipsters.
It's happening.
But we're on the bottom side of this burger right now, and we need to be flipped.
Yeah, let's do it. I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Oh.
And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.